My name is Ron Manderson. I'm the Executive Director of the National Association of County Behavioral Health Directors and also an adjunct professor at Johns Hopkins University in the School of Public Health. So my opening question to you is, what action did any of you take after the Newtown event in your local community, wherever you work, in your university, in the local community mental health center? Who here took an activity or an event? Anybody? One person. What did you do?
Well, the American Academy of Nursing generated a response letter.
Excellent, excellent. And over here, there was someone. Yes, please.
Yeah, I'm with the Mental Health Association of New York City, and we put out a position paper for about that while.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay, excellent, excellent. So, one more, back in the back.
Oh, I work at the Center for Preparedness Research, Education Practice. We work with the Philadelphia Department of Behavioral Health, and we did a functional exercise with the Center for Mental Health.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, good, good. So, it's good to hear that you're involved in these things. So, what I'm going to present isn't really research. It's actions that were taken at the national level in response to the Newtown event. So there are a number of resources that are available on this issue nationally. I have them on this overhead. So I myself wrote a number of commentaries on the Newtown tragedy. I was involved in the development of the National Call to Action, and I'll talk about that. And we were also involved in another activity on creating some recommendations on screening and duty to protect. So if you would like copies of these things, give me your card or give me your email address, and I'll be very glad to send these things to you. So there were a number of things. Newtown was different than Aurora or Tucson because 20 children age 6 and under were killed, and 6 of their teachers were killed. So it created a different national emotional response than I think Tucson or Aurora. And that response lasted for 3 to 4 months. And there were just all kinds of national activity that went on during that period. And so I'll talk about the field response, what we did, how the president and the Congress responded. And then I want to add role in screening and duty to protect, because that's kind of a third rail for people from the behavioral health field here. So the field response. So a week after the Newtown event, was led by Eric Gopplerud and myself, created a national call to action. And we hosted a number of telephone calls. Some of you may or may not have been on those calls, to discuss what our position was going to be on this and what action we were going to take. So the event happened on the 14th of December. By the 21st of December, we had our national call to action, and we had sign-ons of 150 national and state organizations. In that national call to action, we asked for several things. We need to engage in early recognition and intervention when problems are identified in people in the school system, which typically has not happened historically. We need to teach people, secondly, we need to teach people to recognize the signs and symptoms of mental illness and to take appropriate action. Many people recognize the signs and symptoms, and there are obvious instances in Tucson and Aurora where that was true, but it never went to the next step where the person then stepped forward and took an action in regard to this. We also argued that if you're going to take an action, there has to be a place to take the action to, and that in effect, the mental health system and the substance use system in the United States do not have the capacity. We argued for a doubling of the capacity of the mental health and substance use system. And finally, in the national call to action, which was more controversial than the other three, we thanked the president and the vice president for taking on the issue of gun control. So those were the four elements that were in the national call to action. By December 21st, we had the document done. We had the 150 organizations signed on. Then we sent it to everybody. We sent it to the president, the vice president, the speaker of the House, the president pro tem of the Senate, all the committee chairs in the Senate and the House who had cognizance of these particular issues. We then also, by December 28th, did a second response, and we wanted to go outside of the mental health field, and obviously this is much more controversial. So we took on two things. We took on the issue of gun screening, and what we argued in gun screening is that it's very important to do gun screening, but it needs to be done on the basis of propensity to violence or actual violence, not simply as a litmus test, has someone ever had mental health services? That was very controversial, obviously. And on duty to protect, we argued that instead of laws such as were passed in New York right after Newtown, where if a provider is sitting there and someone comes in and says, I have a gun in my closet, the provider then has a duty to report that, that this needs to be a multi-phase process, same as used in child protective services or elder protective services. The provider may report this, but no action is taken until there's a secondary assessment by someone else other than the provider. Number one, that protects the provider, and number two, it protects the civil rights of the person who's being reported upon here. This was much more controversial than the first one. First one, we had 150 sign-ons in no time. The second one, it took us much longer. It took us several weeks to get about 60 sign-ons. Once we had the 60 sign-ons, we also sent that same people, the president, the vice president, the speaker, the president pro tem of the Senate, and so on and so on. Then, several things happened. The president created a work group led by the vice president to look into these issues, and we actually were invited to come and give testimony, and the day we came and gave testimony, the people taking testimony were Secretary Sebelius and Attorney General Holder, and we went through the same things that I just went through with you. Some of those things were actually picked up by the White House. So on January 16th, the President held a press conference, and he issued 23 executive orders that day, including several things that are very relevant to mental health. He issued an executive order ordering HHS to complete the parity regulations by the end of calendar year 2013. And then there were a whole bunch of other actions in there that were taken relevant to current programs of SAMHSA and so on. In addition to the executive orders, he also proposed a set of legislation that included the three things that I identified before: early recognition and intervention, training to recognize and to refer, and to expand the capacity of the mental health and substance use system, but he didn't double the capacity, basically. All three of those things were in the recommended legislation. The legislation then went to the Hill, and the legislation became part of the gun control debate that you all heard about in the summer months. And in the end, the Senate was unable to create the number of votes that were needed. They needed 60 plus votes to move the gun control legislation. Even though they had more than 50 people, they couldn't get 60 votes. And in that package was a bill called the Mental Health Awareness and Improvement Act that had been added as an amendment to the gun control bill by a vote of 95-2. And the vote of 95-2 in the Senate is virtually unheard of. It's that Mental Health Awareness and Improvement Act is the piece of legislation that has the three things in that I mentioned. And because they couldn't get the 60 votes, the gun control legislation failed. In both the Senate and the House, they both still want to do something post-Newtown. They want to have legislation that says we responded to Newtown in some responsible way. So, the Mental Health Awareness and Improvement Act, which is still sitting out there, includes first aid training for teachers, training of 5,000 new mental health providers for schools, master's level people, social workers, psychologists, and so on, and specific projects for what are called transition age young adults. Transition age young adults are people who are 18 to 25, and virtually every one of the incidents that you recall here that relate to this in Tucson and in Aurora and other places involve people who are between the ages of 18 and 25, and we have a huge discontinuity in our behavioral health system. Someone comes up to age 18, they've been in the child system, all of a sudden there's a discontinuity for that person as they move over into the adult system, and that occurs at different ages in different states because the states are not consistent, basically. The next event, a little bit out of time here with the Senate vote on the gun control, but shortly before the Senate vote on the gun control legislation, there was a White House conference on mental health that focused on Newtown, and it focused on response to the psychological problems of veterans. Very interesting conference. It was led by President Obama and the Vice President. It was a whole day event. There were about 300 people there representing the behavioral health fields. The primary highlights of that event were outreach to teens using social media. If you know who Allison Melman is, Allison Melman is a person who has created a website in response to her own brother committing suicide while her brother was in college. So it's that type of activity that was emphasized. All the big media people were there, MTM and others, and it was emphasized that the way to reach these teens is to use social media because that's how these teens communicate these days. They also emphasized outreach to returning veterans, and there's a whole discussion we could have about that activity as well. I won't go into that today. I think the lesson in this for us in behavioral health is there was absolutely no discussion in the White House conference on linkage between what the social media actions were and relationship to behavioral health providers, which I think was a gap in the process. So, wrapping up here then, coming down to the end, where are we now? So I'm here to do advocacy with you to support the Mental Health Awareness and Improvement Act. That act is still sitting out there. I believe we could actually get that act passed if we take appropriate action. So I would encourage you to contact your two senators, tell them you want them to bring that bill back and pass that bill before the end of the year. Secondly, on gun screening and duty to protect, going to be a much harder fight in that area. And I think some of the issues to think about in behavioral health as you sit there as a person from the behavioral health field is we cannot confuse these types of things with our own vested self-interest. What became very obvious to me as we pushed this was a lot of people were scared to say anything about this because they worried it would affect their own vested self-interest among their members. You know, half of my members are going to oppose me if I push this, and so on. I think we have to ourselves have more courage as we move into this area. So with that, I'm going to stop. I'll put my contact information up here in my web address if you want to send me an email, and we'll wrap up here. Okay. Yes, please.
Do you know what the argument was against a focus on screening for violence or propensity to violence versus just a mental health disorder in general?
The difficulty of doing it.
Okay.
So people didn't oppose the idea of screening, and just so happens about a week before this occurred, I had reviewed a paper for a journal. And part of the paper I reviewed was actually a scale to screen people for violence. So there is work ongoing out there. It's much easier to reach across, grab a data file that has a list of names. Every one of these people has received mental health services in the state of New York, or every one of these people has been in inpatient care in the state of New York. It's the issue of ease and not the issue of doing it in a different way other than the complexity of it, I think. I think in behavioral health, the issue for us is we are very ambivalent about doing anything that doesn't relate specifically to mental health. We have a lot of narrow tunnel vision here, basically. Yeah, please.
Can you talk about moving the screening process earlier in life before you get to the teen years?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And let me say a word about that as well. So if we can get the Mental Health Awareness and Improvement Act actually passed, there is money in there to work with children at much lower levels in the school system and to screen them, basically. And that's another issue that needs to be talked through because screening at young ages is controversial. There's a piece in the Affordable Care Act, which I'll talk more about tomorrow. Beginning on January 1st, 2014, every child under the age of two in the United States will have a complete screening for everything. And this is going to be very valuable in our area for several things, for fetal alcohol syndrome. If I can identify a fetal alcohol syndrome in someone before age two, I can probably do something about it. If I don't, the person is age five, I probably can't. So there's going to be huge opportunity to make impact on the kinds of screening that are done. We need to be at that table and not be scared to be at the table, basically. Yeah.
I was wondering if you attracted opposition from parents on the screening.
We generally had good support from NAMI and the NAMI state affiliate, so that group did not oppose us on this, basically. Well, the issue on the gun control legislation not passing is you have a significant number of people in the Senate whose campaigns are supported by gun money and the National Rifle Association. So they, even though personally they may believe something different, they will vote against this simply to get the campaign money for their next campaign.
Right. Is there, but could the Mental Health Awareness Act be pulled out?
Yes, that's what I'm advocating for, that we go in there, pull this out, and it become its own independent bill in the Senate. And if it passed 95-2 previously, I have every belief it would pass again with sufficient votes to make it through the Senate, basically. Okay, final comment or question here.
Thank you. Do you have any field response plan for the anniversary of the Newtown?
Absolutely, absolutely. If we haven't gotten the Mental Health Awareness and Improvement Act passed by that time, we will be back making arguments again. Yes. Please join us in that. Okay, good. Okay, thank you very much.